Welcome to Windows into Eternity with Almeen. This hour you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
But we hope you're having a wonderful day. And thank you so much for joining us on this, our BBS show. And I've got many of your questions ready to answer from all over the world. And we'll begin with our brother Mark from Belgium. My brothers and sisters, he asks a very valid question, and I am so pleased that he's asked, because sometimes students, after having been in my classes and seeing some of their classmates go through profound transfiguration, some move into immortality, all sorts of things happening, go home thinking, what's wrong with me? I don't feel that much difference. And so our brother Mark from Belgium asks, after my first pod in Dublin, I find myself troubled as I don't feel nor see any change at all in my way of being. In other words, he's talking about transfiguration having taken place. He says, my mind is buzzing as much as ever, for instance. I don't have the slightest doubt about the sacred work we all perform together. I had tried my best to release my fears and expectations as much as possible before coming. Now I wonder what I missed. Am I so resistant to change? My brother Mark, there are a couple of things to consider, and then there are some things that you can do that might make a very large difference. The first thing to consider is this. See, when light workers that are the major pillars of basically the light work on Earth, and Earth is the major pillar for cosmic light work. It's like the pivot point. When those major people like yourself, major pivot points, go through their stages of transfiguration, they actually, by volunteering, hook into specific aspects of the cosmos. For example, let's say we have a lady coming into my class, and when she was younger, she was put out of her house, very horrible home life, went into prostitution, and became a major light worker. And of course, it doesn't matter what you've over, where you've been. It what matters is how much you overcome. So now she wants to go into immortality, let's say. She would hook into the group, as an example, having chosen those life experiences, that might mean all those who have sold themselves into bondage to others for the sake of, of livelihood. And so she might find that based on another who had a childhood of physical abuse, you know, or another who had a great parents and great childhood, that there are different rates at which these people go into these stages because they've hooked into soul groups. Some hook into soul groups that are more resistant than others. Some hook into soul groups that have family members that are tyrants. Well, you know, when your roof over your head might depend on a family home, like many mothers are in that situation with little kids, and they can't hold down a job. They've got four or five little kids. The roof over their head is provided by a family member. We find that that is a lot more of a hard soul group to move through. So, Mark, the soul group, who knows what it is, my brother, that you have, that you have hooked into, might make it harder for you to move through. It might not be the first time. It might be the second time. So that is one way that that could occur. But now let's look at the other ways. Excuse me, just need to drink my minty water here. But the other thing is this. If your life has been one of demands, do this at this time, be here at this time, or there are other factors in your life that you're trying not to look at, factors that are not a path with heart, but you don't want to look at it because you think that it might threaten your life's course or your life's well-being or your abundant flow. For instance, let's say you're in a job that you don't like, but it pays you so well that you become a slave to it, you see. So you don't want to change jobs because you know that you might never get this kind of salary again. Then you suppress the fact of how unpleasant it is for you at work. That is an example of where you are suppressing something. So either you are very bound to clocks and schedules and performance, or alternately, you are suppressing that which does not, which does not in fact suit you to change, or so you believe. In both instances, that will keep you in your head. And even though massive transfigurations might happen to the body, fields to the body itself, it may not fully click in and not fully change. And I'll give you an explanation of what happened to me so that you understand the type of thing I'm talking about here. Until you go out of linear time. If you go into eternal time and then eventually into no time, then you will immediately feel the change. On the other hand, if it is something that you're repressing, feelings that don't feel good, but you're repressing them because you don't know how to get out of it. If you do that, the way you repress it is with dialogue of the mind, Mark. And so, my beloved brother, either way is going to be problematic and continue to make the dialogue of the mind. Let's go back now to this issue of no time. I think that I might have mentioned it on one of the BBS shows before, but let's just go through this one more time. I went into my ascended mastery levels. Now, folks that take a look at the book, let me see, which one is it? It's Secrets of the Hidden Realms. I've got it very well explained in that one. There's some of it in Journey to the Heart of God, but the best explanation is there. There's also a very good web tutorial that's very intensive that you can take a peek at that's put out by BBS. And it's the BBS web tutorials that they have available. And it's on the stages of ascension that we go through as human beings. And when one takes a look at that, when you go into ascended mastery, there are three phases. When I went into my first phase of ascended mastery, it was the 5th of January, 2005. By February, it was the last Thursday of February, and I was in a room in Toronto with a workshop, and I was in my hotel room at night. When I went into the ascended mastery of immortality, which is the second phase, I felt things like popcorn popping in my cells. The very strange things were happening in my head. It felt like the top of my head was opening up, and just this vast, vast feeling, which I had anyway, because when I went into the first phase, everything became automatic, and the depths of my emotions were incredible. As I went into this phase, I actually had a god in the room with me. That's one of the earthly gods that you'd recognize if I said the name, but they were in the room with me at the time when it happened. I didn't feel dramatically different afterwards. I knew when it was happening because I had like a shock, like a lightning flash going through my body, and it started from the middle of my head. Many of the masters in my classes that go into immortality don't even feel those things now. It's so easy to go in there because of how much the planet has ascended. So what happened is that afterwards I didn't have that big of a change. I'm going, okay, I wasn't immortal before, I'm immortal now. What feels different? Well, there were certain things that changed, like I went to the bathroom substantially less. You know, my Irish class usually teases me because sometimes the entire day of teaching, I don't not one time go to the bathroom. I'll go in the morning, I'll go in the evening. But the point is that that was a change. My appetite's diminished. But other than that, not that big of a deal, it felt like. It was because the fields in my body and the illustrations are in the book, Secrets of the Hidden Realms. In fact, we have Father's Day this coming Sunday. And why don't we just do this? We will do Secrets of the Hidden Realms. Now, as you, for those of you who will listen to this later as it's broadcast, you will notice that this is a pre-record. And so I'm recording it early in June. Anybody hearing this show, even on the archives, I am willing to give the book Secrets of the Hidden Realms at half price. Now it's very affordable. It's down from $20 to $9.95. So if you get Secrets of the Hidden Realms and really look at the phases of man, you will see that emotions diminish during the second and the last phase of the ascended mastery. That was also different because I had intense emotions in the first phase, which we call the place of the totally silent mind. I just had to sort of coin a phrase for it because not many people write about this that go through this. So then I received the message from the infinite, and it said, you have gone into immortal mastery, but not your body. That is why you're not feeling different. Take 1 week, and this is my suggestion to you, my brother Mark. Take 1 week if you can. If you can't, do several weekends in a row. If you can't do that because you're a mom with five kids, okay, then you take so many hours every weekend, or a half an hour or an hour every night when the kids are in bed. But you do nothing. You don't look at the clock. You don't. That week, I turned off my televisions. I didn't even listen to music. I was permitted to watch two documentaries, The Winged Migration, which has to do with the migration of birds, and the other one was The Weeping Camel, which is a documentary of this emotion of, that had to be shed in this community of this one camel who had had a traumatic birth. It was a documentary. It gave a feeling of timelessness. Out in the middle of Mongolia, the way that they live in their yurts, and the birds as well. So these are the only two in 1 week that I watched. Other than that, no music. I didn't go into public more than I could help it. I had to get food twice, if I remember correctly. But it's better if you stock up. Turn off your faxes, close your clocks, turn off your fax machines, you know, phones, what cell phones, whatever it is. And you do nothing. You sleep when you want to. You eat when you're hungry. You don't need to have special hours to sleep in. No demands on you for 1 week. The change that I experienced, the profound bliss that I was told was coming in this second phase, because bliss is usually an issue in the second phases of the stages of man. And the bliss that I experienced at that time, it was beyond belief. My body changed at that point. So, Mark, it is time for you to go into the place of no time, my beloved brother. Take the time and do it. Because you have gone through transfigurations. I watched the fields around you change, and it is just that you need to bring your body up to speed. And I asked the infinite why in my case that had not been done. And it said, because you've been you are being rushed through these stages. If you had sat for a year in the first phase of ascended mastery, then gone into the second phase, it would be different, but it was a matter of weeks. And I had to go into the second phase because of certain things that I was given to do, that I needed to be immortal for the body for. So that is my answer to that, and you need to look very, very carefully at parts of your life where you think that you can't live any other way, even though it's very uncomfortable to you. So either your attitude needs to change or the situation needs to change. But if we wear a ball and chain and then pretend it doesn't weigh anything, then it's going to have to take a dialogue of the mind to keep it there. Let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll come back and we'll look at Richard from Texas's question.
The Gift of the Unicorns is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers a question: do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today. The world of mysticism has yet another reason to rejoice. Almeen has authored another manuscript of profound knowledge. It's entitled Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of the Mysteries of Isis. Through a time travel tunnel linking Ireland and Egypt, Isis has sent a small group of masters to prepare for the day when the mysteries would once again be released to the world to restore balance and enhance life, and establish the Order of the White Rose to guard the sacred objects and the secrets of Isis. In an unprecedented event heralding the advent of a time of light, these mysteries are released for the very first time. Packed with truly thought-provoking information, this book is bound to have an indelible impression on not only the reader, but on global New Age philosophy. To reserve your copy of this groundbreaking work, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016.
Welcome back to our second quarter, and let's take a look at a question from our brother Richard from Texas. He says, I have been curious about the connection of identical twins. Being one myself, I've experienced strange occurrences of our behavior. My question is that at times of meeting new people where I've just introduced myself, I will later be mistakenly called by my brother's name, even when the person has no knowledge of my brother or his name. And my brother reports the same thing happening to him as well. I've also been curious about what causes the zygote to split in the womb, as happens when identical twins are conceived. Any insights you could share would be wonderful. Well, we are the microcosm of the macrocosm. We have at all times represented what is out there, right here on Earth. If you find it in the cosmos, if you find the cosmos being part of something even bigger, which we'll call the macro-macrocosm, the microcosm is going to have incidences where that is reflected as well. The actual fact of it is, Richard, that why do we have this splitting of the zygote in the womb? Because that is what we had in the macrocosm. The cosmos as we know it has layers of white light. We are a white light cosmos. Now, that has had some problems, because Being a white light cosmos during the ascension process, the infinite kept dissolving and dissolving and dissolving things that did not serve. But when you dissolve black spots on a white background, you end up making the background gray because you're dissolving things into that which has all levels of light. So this cosmos, you know, that's one of the problematic areas. The other area that has been an issue to be in a white light cosmos, and I'll explain how this ties in with twins here in just a sec, is the fact that when you are in a white light cosmos, the possibilities are less. And just think of it as a very masculine, vertical accessing of reality. It is that which is like the small, very bright light with your flashlight on the ceiling in a very big dark room. You only see that little spot, but very clearly because it's very concentrated, sharp light. On the other hand, if we were in a black light cosmos, a cosmos which we are a twin of, which actually existed. So if you have the black light cosmos, the possibilities of seeing is like a broad flashlight circle on the ceiling that isn't that well defined, but it sees so much more peripherally. We are part of a twinned pair. The black light cosmos gives the opportunity for far more expression because it isn't bound by the three primary colors of the white light. It has no light, and so the full spectrum of light is available to us. And the full spectrum of light includes things that we can't necessarily see in our white light cosmos. So, and then that includes the, you know, the broader spectrum of light. This is the relationship that identical twins have. They often feel inseparably connected. When they are together, life seems to be more sane. It seems to be better. When white light and black light combine, it cancels out illusion. This is what identical twins on Earth have represented. Our cosmos's twin is the black light. When we combine, much of the illusion, if not all of the illusion, will be gone that exists within the cosmos. Now, why people are calling you that? Do you really belong as separate twins? Well, belong means yes, of course, otherwise you wouldn't be separate twins, but you are one soul that has chosen two different expressions. That is what identical twins are. Now, twins that are not identical, and I'm very fascinated that you asked this question, Richard, because this is my first time of answering this for anyone. Twins that are not identical form parallel realities. And parallel realities are, like, if you look at the white light, it's masculine. If you look at the black light, it's feminine. Identical twins, there usually is one that's more receptive and one that's more proactive. When you look at dissimilar twins, unidentical twins, they are neutral. The one is negative-positive, the other one is positive-negative, and so on. It creates parallel realities. The white light, black light cosmos is an above and below. And the other is more like a left and a right, if you will. So why people call you your brother's name is that these are people that the two of you, and I say two of you, but you are really, this is one of the rare occasions because people are talking all the time about soulmates, and there are many reasons why that is a totally illogical concept at this time. It didn't used to be, and I'll explain that in a moment. But this is the closest thing you get to a soul, to a twin flame or a soulmate or whatever it is people call it, because you are one soul. But then you do manifest as twins. Now, Why would you choose to do that? Well, because it enhances chances for ascension. You are in like a group soul, so you will often know when something is happening to your brother, even when you're not together, and vice versa. You have a group soul because you are one soul. It maximizes chances for enlightenment. It maximizes chances for success. And those that have been with you in previous lifetimes couldn't tell you apart then, they still can't tell you apart now. And it is as though your brother lives within you and you live within your brother. So that is the reason for it happening the way it does. The issue of soulmates and twin flames. See, for eons of existence, we have been in a descension. During this descension called the Great Fall, what happened is that we attracted opposites. During that time, the lighter you were, the more dark the beings that you attracted. But it was a very, very strong attraction. Now, let's say you were in lifetimes together and one or the other lost their life, for instance, before this relationship would reveal the great polarity that it encompassed, you would simply remember such a powerful attraction and then search for this person lifetime after lifetime. But when we turned around at the bottom of the loop of descension and started going upwards, many of those we remember as having these strong fatal attractions, might I add, because we were totally, as the lighter we were, the darker they were, but we wouldn't have seen it because of the attraction. During that time, opposite matter and opposite energy attracted. To read about how that changed, you would have to get the book The Ring of Truth, or you can go to our Belvaspata Almin. Just look up belvaspata.almin, I believe, B-E-L-V-A-S-P-A-T-A, and it will explain to you that that changed in August of 2006. But it will also explain the ramifications of it. So we've been attracting opposites and calling them our soulmates and longing for them because, you know, seldom did we find such a strong attraction. But those beings might have ceased to exist because of their non-life enhancing qualities as we started to ascend as a cosmos. When we went into descension, the martyrs were the light workers. As we went into ascension, the ones that ceased to exist and released a lot of resources that could then be used to assist the ascension even further, the martyrs were those non-life enhancing ones. And the revelations in the book of Revelation, there's a little bit that says that there, I think it's the book of Revelation, but certainly in the New Testament, that kings and the great men of the land will hide in their secret places, but nothing will be able to save them. Because certain soul groups have simply ceased to exist during the ascension. They have no right to be at these higher levels. So, you know, be careful what you look for, because those soul mates hopefully are no longer there if this is the condition that I'm speaking of. However, it could be something else. When creation occurred at the very beginning, there were groups of beings created at once. There were 144 gods called the Ancient Ones created. They are a soul group. They are of similar level of development and consciousness. Those beings have come and gone through time tunnels, giving themselves implanted memories of childhood. Throughout the ages, they've never been born, they've never died. 18 of them are called the super gods. And so those are a soul group. Then 1,440, then 144,000, and so on, were made until eventually humanity was made. When you're made with a soul group, but you can see how they get larger and larger, those are also ones you feel as though they are your soul mates. But you're not the same soul the way twins are, of course. So, okay, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Almine at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back, and we're going to further explore your questions. Let us take a look. We've got here a question about this issue of the stages of dreaming, and it is from Niels from the Netherlands. And Niels, I hope you are feeling better, dear, because I know that you have had a very trying experience recently, and our prayers are with you concerning a quick recovery from that. You are saying, can you describe the difference between the stages of dreaming we have exited and the cycles of illusion we are still in? How do they differ from each other? And how do we deal as best we can with this new problem of the still lingering illusions? And he puts new problem in quotation marks. Our brother Niels is a very advanced master, and he understands, of course, that all is imperfection, but it is still needing an explanation. So, the dream stages, why do they exist at all? My brothers and sisters, the dream stages that we have been in, the cycles of the fall. Now, first of all, understand that in the sleep state that we've been in as a cosmos, a lot of it, how can I say it? If you draw a circle on a piece of paper and you go down one side, that's a descension cycle. You go up the other side, that's an ascension part of the cycle. But many of these, like if you go round and round that circle 96 times, that's about what we lived in the deep stages of the dream time, what scientists called REM4, R-E-M, Rapid Eye Movement 4. That's a very deep dreaming stage. We went around it about 96 times. The 97th, we broke out, only to find that we are in a bigger circle. We went around that circle many, many, many times, only to find when we broke out, we were in a bigger circle. Now, we traced 7 of those circles, which are the 7 directions. The first 4 are the REM stages of sleep that are identified by scientists. REM, REM 2, REM 3, and REM 4. When you come out of it, there is semi-awake stages, and there are three of those. This comprises like daydreaming, fantasy, imagination. These all together comprise dream states. But Niels, if you look at then what we have, having come through those seven stages, identified them, we come out the other side to find that all of those seven stages have made a circle. They were nothing more than one more deep dream stage, and it's a circle, and we go round and round and round, and we go, you know, we have to break through one after the other, four times, then we go into three half-awake stages, then we come out the other side and find, yet again, we are in a deep circle. Why is this? This has been one of the hardest things for me to learn in this work with the students in my classes, as we've been given instructions every pod we are encountering the new. I can never give you a description of a pod, because what I am doing is in fact to teach what I've never learned before and experience with my students what we've never experienced before. So there's no way to explain what a pod is. But during our pods, this has been one of the most disconcerting things to have to learn, because we would work our heart out and simply find we've just now exited in an even bigger cycle. And it's been very discouraging until I finally figured, no, wait a minute, this is not going nowhere. This is teaching us that there are only cycles when there is a backwards mirroring going on. Because when there's mirroring, when you stand between two mirrors, you as an image go on forever and ever and ever and ever. How do you get rid of those images? You remove the mirrors. Because if you just keep tackling the images in the mirror, there is no end to it. So what we have learned over many cycles of doing this is that when there is a cycle repeating over and over and over, there are core issues that need to be solved. Each cycle, one of those core issues, if not more, have been dealt with, understood, and even if we encounter it still in the next cycle, it's a dress rehearsal. And slowly but surely, the play is completed. And an example would be this. Let's take a look at your second part of your questions. How do they differ from each other? They differ from each other in that we start to take our attention away from the big shadow of a big fly on the silver screen of the movie to the fly on the lens of the projector. And, you know, because we can be swatting flies on the movie screen over and over, but never actually get to the end of it, because we're now dealing with the fly on the projector. But we had to swat a couple of flies there on the big screen, and there's a screen beyond that screen, screen beyond that screen, and the fly just keeps getting bigger. So every time we're in a circle, we see more of what the problem is, but the problem will just keep revealing itself in bigger and bigger format unless we deal with the fly on the lens of the projector. So that is how you get rid of cycles. We have been doing that. For example, we have been in our cycles in a triad of change. We have been dealing with transformation, and as a consequence, currently, we have the School of Belvoir Spital. We have got major products available with all sorts of programs that are designed. We've just barely received, after years of asking, one for autism, Alzheimer's, bipolar and depression, and as well as schizophrenia. And finally, after years of asking, we are starting this month to receive the one for HIV and AIDS. And The reason we couldn't receive it before is these conditions do not just exist. They are indicative of what exists in the cosmos. And so while those things out there exist, it's because they exist here and vice versa. But here is the thing. The Bhavaspatar represents transformation. We spent years shedding the obsolete. We're still doing some of that. That is represented by the body of information given to us by the infinite, which is Bhavaspatar. Its task is to be transformative. It sheds the obsolete. Then we come to alchemy. Currently, we quite possibly, actually, I'm hearing words being said here next to me in the outside the wall of my bedroom, and there are groups of angels that are outside our house today, and they're saying, no, not quite possibly, it's really so. Well, okay, it's really so that currently we are in our hands the largest and most profound body of alchemy anywhere on the planet. And the really true in-depth understanding of alchemy, as well as its accurate and true power sources. What is out there is old alchemy, if there's anything out there whatsoever. And what it works with is the power sources of matrices and grids, the watchers. They are the mirror images. They are backwards. Therefore, they are beings of illusion. So the old alchemy can no longer work. So alchemy is transmutation. It leverages something from lower to higher. This is just being established during this June and July of 2009 as the Academy of Alchemy. And we are putting it together and giving you the most comprehensive body of alchemy available. And then we have got Transfiguration. And Transfiguration is being established, and I have just finished writing over 1,000 handwritten pages for its curriculum, for its first course, which is a 3-month course called The Science of Immortality and Incorruptibility. And it is the Institute of Applied Mysticism. And so this represents Transfiguration. This is what we have been working with. First of all, we were getting rid of anything that didn't serve. Daily, for 6 hours a day, I used to be called to repeat into the physical languages what the infinite was writing in the book of life that needed to be done away with. This was our cosmic Bhavaspatar, if you will, the transformation. Then we have been working with alchemy. Alchemy was a major part of the ascension of the cosmos because the alchemical leveraging of our levels of life to the next level is what was used to get rid of membranes that separated us from higher states of consciousness and for the cosmos to ascend. Alchemy. And that has been, much of the work has been done in alchemy. The third stage, the transfiguration, it started months ago, Niels, where instead of saying, this should not be and let's change this to this, we started to work with putting in place that which is. And it was, work that was done as instructed by the Infinite to the Masters in my classes, and of course the Infinite has done it cosmically. So as long as we are working with those three separately, see, each of those academies and each of the Bhavaspatar products not only has Bhavaspatar, but it either is combined with mysticism or it is combined with alchemy or both. In alchemy, the same. You have alchemical packages that are available that also use Bhavaspatar and mysticism. And so forth, also with the applied school of mysticism. For instance, after 3 months of the science of immortality and incorruptibility, the students will have prepared themselves so when they graduate, they get a book for free And it's you know, about, I'd say about 290 pages or so, that is the Belvaspitar of incorruptibility, to create incorruptibility in the body. And it is not for sale to anyone. It's given to those who graduate from this course, because it takes 3 months of preparation to do it. And you don't need to be licensed. You don't need to be initiated, because it is self-Belvaspitar. It's only done on the self. So this is an example of why the cycles have continued. We have dealt with them as three separate stages of change. What I have created here with these three colleges is basically exactly what was instructed by the infinite that I should do. But what they are doing within their own bodies of information is they're pulling in the other two bodies. And they're starting on each corner of the triad to combine transmutation, transformation, transfiguration. As that is done, we are preparing for something extraordinary to come, which is in the middle. It's the place where you become the null point, where through your very being, you cancel out illusion, because you are in oneness with Source. The transfiguration, the mysticism that is being given in this first course, prepares the person for that, because that's where you find incorruptibility. Again, you leverage yourself upwards, so you're using alchemy. You let go of all that you think you knew to live like a child, spontaneously in the moment, which is transformation. And so it combines into something most holy, which we have not yet received. But why this ties in with this is we will find that we are in cycles as long as anything that should be at oneness is separated. It is not an accident, as you can see. What it is a timing mechanism. We are basically in this cosmic sack of individuated life in an embryonic sack. Something is to birth from that sack, but only at the correct time, when it's time for the proper birthing to take place. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Almin continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almin is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almin, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
The Way of the Toltec Nagual, New Precepts for the Spiritual Warrior, is now available from Almin. Not only is this wisdom-packed book a guide for serious students of the Toltec Way, but also a font of knowledge for all truth seekers. Mapping out the revolutionary changes in Toltec mysticism, it presents the precepts of mastery sought out by all who travel the road of illumination and spiritual warriorship. Almin reveals publicly, for the first time, the ancient power symbols used by Toltec Nahuals to assist in obtaining freedom from illusion. This book also features information about the hidden planets used by the Toltecs and the astrology of Isis. The Way of the Toltec Nagual, New Precepts for the Spiritual Warrior, is now available in paperback, or as an electronic download, or as an audiobook spoken by Armin. To receive your copy, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
Welcome back, and we have time at least for one more question, and I'm hoping maybe two, but let's take a look. And it's Donna from Vancouver, Canada. She says, on Twitter last month, you mentioned that the massive Inner Earth Army, a reality, was changed last night. Did that include all the Nazi bases in the crust of the Earth, Antarctica, South America, and their UFO fleet? Okay, so let me fill our listeners in on a little bit of this. To my great astonishment, I learned something when I received the information for this course on mysticism, which is the study of light and shadow and how to utilize both in order to become an incorruptible being, because it is in removing the shadows that we reveal that which is. We uncovered that there were groups of gods, and there were groups of super gods, and some of them were the raw gods that were from the past, and some were the gods called the Anahi Asai, and that literally means in the language the overseers of life. Both the raw gods and the Anahi Asai, which includes two groups of artificial life forms, are from the future. The raw gods are from the past. Now, what that is, when the cosmos is on a wheel that is turning or has been turning, is actually next week's discussion. So the next taping will deal with that. But I started to receive the emblems of two of these six groups from the future gods that's called the Anahi Asai. And found, to my surprise, that two of those groups were called the Anazi, and the other group is called the Ari Ana. And the Ari Ana and the Anazi had within their emblems a swastika. And then I said, wait a minute, Anazi is Nazi. Where else would that word in the world be coming from? This is a Nazi. And there's a swastika in their emblem. The Ariana are the ones that do the genetic engineering to create the Aryan race, the chosen race. Because a lot of what was done with the Nazis, with the Aryan race, I mean, it just didn't make any sense. Because the mercenaries they had fighting for them towards the end were from many different countries, and some of them weren't even Caucasian. So what were they doing with this Aryan race conquering the world? Well, it wasn't them. It was not the German people. And there was major mind control done on the German people. The atrocities were orchestrated by beings that had come from the future that looked just like men, and had come in at that particular time. The Anazi agenda was military occupation of the earth. The Aryan, the Ariana, the other group that worked with them, and Ariana, literally the word Orion comes from that star language. It means, Arian means that which is lords of the heavens, is what it's called, lords of the heavens. They were trying to create a genetic race that would, when we catch up with the future from which they came, would give them the added advantage and world dominance that they wanted. And what she is talking about is that in 2005, actually around August of 2005, I was sent by the Infinite to look at the preparations that were made at that time for the Fourth Reich. And what I uncovered was at the headwaters of Brazil, there was various atomic weapons being done. There was a huge one about the size of a house, something parked off in the deep straits off the coast of Nova Scotia area, that had missiles aimed at all the major cities in America. There was one buried on the shore in Denmark that the Danish people didn't even know about. I found bombs and a book on the Fourth Reich in a vault in Switzerland and in the Vatican. There is a close connection with the Vatican and the Nazi agenda. In fact, they're tenants. There are three rooms there occupied by them. So the point of the matter is, did this reality change as well, is what she's asking, because work was done. There was an inner Earth army that was being produced, and that had to be changed, and so major work was done by the Infinite, and the whole cosmos reality, the cosmic reality shifted. All of this, Donna, did shift. So none of this right now is to be concerned about. There may be other things, but these things that you mention, those have shifted. We've unfortunately come to the end of our program, and so we will talk to you again next week, or if you're with us for the pre-records, in a few minutes.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almin experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the Infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book had been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Almin's life was dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is. It is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almin's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the premier CD set. They are available from Almin at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, Windows into Eternity with Almin. Please join us again next week.